You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Thursday, it's the double-headed dream team edition of Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Now, Viv, I sent you a message and I said, write your own script for today. And you came up with a name that I wouldn't have thought you would have come up with because of all the turmoil going on in the broader market. You came up with Eli Lilly, and it shows you the vanity of humanity. I mean, okay, the diabetes drug, which has done so well, but the weight loss drug, look at their numbers. They were extraordinary.
It's the same drug. It is literally the same drug. But the thing about this, what's amazing, and again, I think, you know, if you look at like pictures of people from like 50, 100 years ago or something, they were skinny, they were fit, you know, and we have not in that position. I think there's something in the food chain or something that's causing a lot of trouble for people. But the reason I say this is something here, because this particular drug that they're doing, which is like a variation of the Mounjaro is a variation of like the stuff that Ozempic that Novo Nordisk. This basically is called GLP-1 antagonist or whatever. It basically produces appetite, you know, and the effect is not just diabetes, not just weight loss. With the Ozempic, they've seen, for instance, a heart disease cut by like 30-40%. Okay, they see kidney disease, you know, reduced. They see liver issues being resolved. It is almost a miracle drug. And I would argue that it's not so much a miracle drug as that there's other stuff that this is particularly attacking across like various things. Our diet is so bad that you cure the diet. So many other things become like, you know, resolved. And that's what he's working with here. And the great thing about this is that people don't understand. Okay, they talk about how expensive it is and so on. But in a couple of years' time, people are going to realize in government that if you give this thing out more freely, your cost as a country is going to go down. You're going to have less people with heart disease, less people with kidney disease, on disability, on diabetes. And so I suspect that it's very soon you're going to start seeing these things being given out more freely by governments and more freely by Medicaid or whatever insurance comes here. And the demand for this thing is going to go up because it's not just going to address the, 10% of people or 11, 12% of people in the US and Europe that have diabetes or pre-diabetes or whatever it may be, but it's also going to help like the 50+% of people that are actually overweight. You know, because if not obese in places like the US, and that I think is going to be the real, you know, future solution to this. And even like I've seen, studies out there showing that it's even linked to helping Alzheimer's. If that is the case, if it does get a link to Alzheimer's, I think Alzheimer's is actually the greatest drug bonanza that's ever going to be is going to be a drug that addresses Alzheimer's.
There's a new way to administer Alzheimer's drugs at the moment, which I saw on television this morning. But yes, the advancement in medical health in pharma, David, is quite extraordinary. David, given what Viv has just said, is it Eli Lilly or the Scandinavian company Novo Nordisk? Yeah. Which one do you go for?
I go for both. Both of them are in competition. Yesterday, Novo Nordisk's results came out, and they were extraordinary. And, you know, I've got to criticize the media because I picked up Business Day today, and it said demand for Wegovy weakens. And I said, I looked through the results yesterday. Revenue was up 53%. Okay, 53%. I don't know. The market was maybe expecting it to go up to 55. I'm making up the numbers. So I don't know. They slightly missed because of supply issues and other issues that have affected them. They, you know, whatever it was. And the point is that they are meeting requirements. And Viv has made a very important statement in the sense that it's going to help governments keep costs down, particularly on medical, if they do give this away. These are real. I know that a lot of celebrities are taking it and swearing by it and, you know, losing a few inches around their backsides or whatever it is because they're going, you know, they're going on stage and so on. But, I mean, when you see the number of people that are obese, and I visit America a lot, not much Australia, but still. And Lindsay, you know, you make a point. And you go to America and you sit down for a meal in a delicatessen or one of those, you know, a diner. You go to a diner. They fill your plate. I mean, you can't see. You know, you order a hot beef on rye or something. I mean, you cannot believe the size of it. So they eat big there. you know, a huge, huge meals. So it's a massive problem. I don't know what the percentages are, but I think that, you know, obesity 60%
is now obese. I mean, there's a technical measure of obesity. Yeah. I mean, whether you're a certain height, a certain body mass, whatever it is. But I think it's something like 60% of Americans are obese. And it's a worldwide problem. And, of course, the food industry thrives on this because, as you say, you condition yourself to having these giant meals. You sit down.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, the pastrami on rye in a New York deli is probably three times the size of something you'd have in Paris or something.
What you learn, Lindsay, is that if you go into a delicatessen, you ask for a half a sandwich. That doesn't mean they only give you half the sandwich, but they cut the filling by half because the meat inside is like 2 inches thick. You know, it's more, you know, around about 2 inches. You know, and you sit down and you get a full bowl of pickles. And the fries or the chips just swamped the plate. But I have to correct you something. Just, Lindsay, please listen to me.
I'm listening.
You know, you said 100 years ago when you looked at pictures of people, you know, they were much thinner. Now, my bobbers and my grannies and all my friends' bobbers and grannies, they all came from Ukraine, Estonia, Lithuania. And I looked at the high jumpers that came out of the Ukraine and Lithuania and all those places, Estonia.
Yeah.
My grandparents looked nothing like that. Okay. So.
Well, because they're not high jumpers, David. They're not aspiring to go to the Paris Olympics of 1924. You know, they're sitting around in the kitchen making lovely food for their 8 children. No, come on.
We always joke that our grandparents came from the cellulite tribe, you know, like.
Look, my mother was a well-rounded woman. My father was fairly slim, and I don't know, but there is a growing trend for overindulgence and overconsumption.
Yeah.
Viv, you're skinny. Yeah. You're a skinny man, right? Tell me you're skinny. You are skinny.
I'm tall, and so I'm actually in the right BMI for my height. I'm 90 kgs, but I'm also like 1.9 something. So it kind of matches off, right? So I'm just about on the upper end of what's allowable, you know. But I do think that, you know, we talk about like the people from the UK. Here's the thing: the healthiest people today are healthier than anyone has ever been. If you want to take care of yourself, you really get fit and you want to get in shape, there's nobody. I mean, the 100 meters, we're talking about the Olympics. When Carl Lewis won the Olympics, right, the gold medal, he would have come last in the last final. But that's why his team would have made him last in the last final, okay? So we've gotten better and better. So there's opportunities out there. But at the same time, there's this huge underbelly in the country, forgive the pun. Of the world, right? We've gotten really, really out of shape because it's so easy to just go and basically buy some pre-packaged thing and just eat it full of sugar and full of, you know, whatever they use to make it taste palatable. Right now we're looking at these drugs coming out, and yes, it's probably like, you know, people could say it's cheating or it's not like whatever. But honestly, when it comes down to it, if this thing makes your life longer, makes you healthier, makes you look better, and it's not going to the gym, and it's not using your willpower to diet, I don't really care. As long as it works, and if this stuff does work.
You know, I want to take up one point as well, which is if I look at myself now, when I was working on the floor of the stock exchange, or even in an office environment, we moved around a lot. You know, there was constant activity in your body, and particularly when we were traders on the floor. You know, now I sit here at the desk the whole day and kind of vegetate. Yes, I'm doing a lot more work because my screen's on and I'm active and everything. But physically, you know, if I don't get up early in the morning and go, I would vegetate. I don't know what would happen. You know, so I have to make a point of doing that. And I think it's a massive issue that we just immobile, you know, that people are not, and we get in the car or Uber or Schmuber or anything like that. You know, no one really kind of moves.
You're shaming me now, David.
It's a big issue.
David, you're shaming me. You get up, I mean, you're in your 70s, and you're stick thin, but healthy. I mean, your fat index must be way down below 15 or something like that. But you're shaming me now because I'm on the verge of having atrophy because of my lack of movement all the time, because I sit over this stupid computer talking to fine people like you, which I enjoy. But it doesn't mean, I mean, I'm sitting here now, And, you know, I'm putting on weight as we speak. It's and I blame you both. Anyway, you, David and Viv, you don't have to take the Eli Lilly drugs. I'm tempted, but it's terribly, terribly expensive. Viv, I spoke to David on Monday about the chaos that ensued from Thursday and Friday on the global markets. What's your general assessment of what happened? There's a little bit of calm now. There's volatility up one day, down the next, dead cat bounce, recovery, whatever people want to classify it as. But what do you think has happened? I always said it was nothing to do with AI, and I said to David on Monday that, again, it was Japan that started it all.
Yeah. Look, here's my way of looking at it. In 2008, we had the financial crisis, which was basically the world almost came to a stop, right? And then you look at the market thereafter, it rallied so strongly. Why? Interest rates fell. We shut down the entire world in 2020 for a couple of years, but the markets rallied. Why? Interest rates fell. Interest rates are able to overcome a lot of stuff right now. And now we're going to go into an interest rate, like, you know, cutting cycle. It's my pretty much, you know, very strong belief that there's nothing really happening right now that's spectacularly off. Maybe, like I talked about before, we're having this bubble in AI that might not be sorted out. But, you know, Sam Altman's releasing pictures of strawberries, which I'll explain to you a little later why this means something. But the thing is that I don't think there's anything significant enough that compares to 2008 or 2020 right now. And we are entering an interest rate cutting cycle. The market may fall, but I don't think it's going to be something like we're going to see like a crash of 2008 or 2020. And even if we did, I still wouldn't be too nervous because we've already seen proof, you know, twice that even in the face of these incredible, you know, once in a lifetime, inverted commas events, lower interest rates, monetary easing is still going to rescue stock prices, unfortunately.
Okay. In that case, we've seen it all before. David, how many crashes similar to the one that we've seen, many crashes over your lifetime, maybe six or seven?
Many. Yeah, many of these kind of ones, the big ones, as you may – you know what? I picked this up before and it kind of jogged my memory. This seems very much like a long-term capital, you know, when they failed in 98 because of issues they had taken. You know, they had taken a massive position which worked out wrong and they were forced to undo it. Mm. And if they would have waited 1 week longer, they would have been on the right side of the trade. But I think it's more panic creating panic. There was a lovely quote from Robert Armstrong in the FT this morning.
Yes.
He writes Unhedged, I think. He writes a column there. And he said, whatever problem we have been having, we are still having it. You know, basically, I'm not sure what's happening, but whatever is happening, it's still happening. And I think that Krugman said the same kind of thing very much. He said, you know, many people sell stocks mainly because prices are falling. If you ask them, why are you selling? Because prices are falling.
Exactly.
So I think Viv is right. It's not 2008. You know, this is not 2000. It's not 2008. It's not COVID, sorry. And we'll get through it. You know, when it finds its bottom, you know, at the moment, I don't think people are in the mood to buy. I still think they're a bit edgy for whatever reason. We can't explain the emotion. But I think the trigger will be rate cuts. You know, if we're looking for a trigger, when Powell does start to cut rates, I think that's going to be a trigger to get the markets back off. I hope we don't have to wait that long to September.
September the 18th, yeah, it's actually six weeks away now, which is far too long. I think if there's another mini contagion, then there'll be an interim cut, an emergency cut, if you like. But, you know, people say, well, it's the perfect storm. Look what happened. Japan, Germany, America, and the Bank of England doing one thing and the Bank of Japan doing another and the US doing something else. I don't think it's a perfect storm. I describe it as a concatenation of circumstances. In other words, a few things coming together all at the same time, economic data, a strange sort of dislocation of central bank policy. And everyone said, well, it's August, so I'm going to get out. And August and September, never mind October, people talk about October all the time. But historically, August and September are worse than October, Viv.
Yeah, look, I mean, looking at Japan, you know, one thing you got to mention is that they're trying to boost up that currency. It went to basically, 162 or something?
Yeah.
Yes.
And after this thing, they got it down to like the low 140s, you know? I think it's a case of, and it's come back to about 147 at the moment. We've already seen this play out again in the past with George Soros at the Bank of England. Okay. You can't, as a central bank, try and boost your currency up like this and maintain it. And they've done it a couple of times. You can just look at the chart. There's these of the dollar versus the yen. Look over for the last couple of years. You just see there's these big, you know, weaknesses. There's a sharp recovery usually because of central bank intervention. And then there's another period of weakness again. And this is like the third or fourth time they've done it in the last, I would say, 2 years almost. And I think it's going to be a long-term problem for the world. Thing that gets us out of this is the fact that now Japan, I think, is a smaller economy than Germany. It used to be the world's third largest, now it's the world's fourth largest. In a couple of years' time, it'll be the world's fifth largest economy. So hopefully it's not so big a deal in the global mess up that it basically destroys, you know, or brings us into another, you know, global recession. But I think the Japanese situation is in and of itself, it's just an isolated situation, almost hopeless. Their GDP ratio is crazy. They have broken their bond market. Their currency is being, you know, like intervened with by the central bank, like this, you know, multiple times. And every time they do it, it's costing them tens of thousands of dollars, and they're not having a long-term effect. And the long-term situation in terms of growth for that country is pathetic, just because they don't have enough people alive, right, or who are going to be alive in the next few years to work the factories and to work the kind of stuff that they need to have working to grow that economy. So.
Yeah, we spoke about this last week, Viv, and I put forward the theory. I remember the days in the 80s when Paul Volcker was chair of the US Federal Reserve, and they intervened against the dollar's movement. And the traders sit back and rub their hands together and say, OK, let's wait a couple of days, and then we'll just go in the other direction. They stem the tide for 2-3 days, and then the trend continues. And the trend is going to continue in the Japanese yen. As you said, it went from 162 to 142, and now here we are, pushing 150 again. It'll go back. A central bank is not bigger than the market. No matter how big it is, it's not bigger than the market. It only has so many reserves. David, you're not a currency trader, are you?
No. I'm not. You know what? It's so difficult because you're dealing to the fourth decimal point. Maybe even sometimes, and I look at quotes here, they're to the sixth decimal point. And, you know, when you're that finely tuned, it's very difficult to get it right. And so many people, when we talk to them about taking their money out or investing offshore, which means that you have to do a currency. No, I'm going to wait. No, I'm going to wait. Oh, it's too, you know, I say, what? No one can read it. I find the bond market as well. I mean, those fourth and fifth decimal places, so difficult to read. So I think that's why you need programs and you need all kinds of algorithms to help you along that, because the crosses can be so, so difficult. These are three-dimensional spreadsheets, you know. It's too difficult for me. I just like to pick up a set of results, read them and say, this is a nice company. I'm going to invest in it. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing about currencies is when they go on a run, they don't stop. It's not like gold up and down, or gold shares up and down all over the place several times a year. When a currency starts going in one direction, it continues in that direction, just like an interest rate raising or cutting cycle. It's not just 1 month up, 1 month down. It also continues, and we're on the cusp of a cutting cycle, one would hope. Talking about currencies, the dollar rand is 18.38. The British pound against the rand is 23.39. The euro rand is 20.05. Euro dollar is 109.10, which is a euro that's about 0.3% weaker. Gold price doing okay, nicely up 1% or just over $24.15 per ounce. Platinum and palladium still below 1,000. 940 for platinum, but still up 1.75%. Palladium up 2.6% to 907. Other commodities over the week, the oil price had a bad time, but it's recovered nicely in the last 2 days. Brent crude oil, $78.87, which is up 0.7%, and West Texas, $76.03 per barrel, up just over 1%. The all-important copper price, down very slightly again, still mired below $4 per pound, $3.95. What else is happening? Not much. Iron ore down at 101.70. S&P 500 futures, goodness me, they're all over the place. Up 1.6% at the moment at 53.10. That's the September futures. US 10-year Treasury bond yield is just below 4%, 3.99% at the moment. The South African 10-year bond yield doesn't know what to do. It's 9.59%. And Bitcoin which went below 50,000 on Monday, is now 58,900, up 5% on the day. David, what stocks caught your eye on the JSE today? Because I've looked at Goldfields, and I've looked at, what was the other one? Quilt has been all over the place this week. I mean, when I say all over the place, I'm being unkind. To the upside.
Quilt, yeah. Oh, no, they had very good numbers. Mm. Very good numbers yesterday. It's not one we follow very carefully. But assets, there were big inflows there. The numbers were good. You know, this was associated with with Old Mutual.
Yes.
They broke away, and it's pretty much Old Mutual in the UK. But it's not one we cover. Again, they're up today. I think the one that surprised me is MTN is up further, you know, up 10.5% today.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. After awful, awful results yesterday, mainly because of the Naira. And a lot of questions. You know, they tried to what they call de-dollarize, I think, their costs, because a lot of their costs are in dollars, and the Naira has been falling dramatically against it. So what it means is your costs go up, and even though if your revenue is high in Naira, which is the Nigerian currency, you make big losses. I think this must have been absorbed in the price of MTN. It's had a shocking performance. You know, it's just trying to scrape the bottom now and pick up now. And this is where you get all the, Lindsay, you get all those, bargain hunters or people trying to say, oh, no, it's too cheap. You know, we've got to buy it now. Going to make lots of money. You get millions of those people around in markets always trying to find the bounce. So
it's 83 rand a share, okay. And while you look it up on the graph, David, of what the high was, it must have been 250 or something. Viv, it's a complicated business, MTN. I know you're moving more US-centric and tech-centric and AI-centric, but when you see MTN and you see the various jurisdictions in which it operates, the Treasury Department of MTN must be one of the busiest in the world. They've got so many different currencies to manage.
Yeah, not just that. They're one of the most difficult jobs because they're dealing with jurisdictions that don't basically follow the normal rule of law that you see in Europe or North America. Europe or North America, if you've done something in the past and it was legal in the past, if the rules have changed, you pretty much get away with it. In places like Nigeria, they could change the rules and say, hey, this affects you back a couple of years, you know what I mean? And that increases the difficulty in operating those countries. And like David mentioned, I think we are down 40% or so from peaks like 2 years ago. So the last 2 years down 40%, even after the current massive rally we've seen. I do think MTN's business plan, initiative to go into Africa and to the Middle East and so on, to places that other people weren't going to, has been rather risky. It has worked out, appeared to work out for a number of times, but I think more recently we've seen a number of setbacks just due to the jurisdictions it's working in. There's nothing much you can do about that. If you're going to operate in a place where the government is going to be capricious or really uncertain about just how much they want you to pay and how they want you to behave, as a company, there's only so much you can do to anticipate that. If they're going to change things all the time and it's going to basically penalize you, unfortunately, that's just the price of doing business in some of these places.
David, did you have a look at the MTN graph? What was the high?
It's the high was, its recent high was over 200, yeah. That's its recent high. If we go back further, I think it was up in the 400 levels or thereabouts. It was I haven't, I think if you go, but I'm only on this particular chart I'm looking up, I'm going back as 2019, but I think if you go back further, it was significantly higher than it is at these levels. I can't remember the exact heights that it caught, that it did touch.
Anyway, the other thing we haven't mentioned, because we've been talking about other more pressing issues, is South African manufacturing output falls 5.2% year-on-year. That's a really, really big fall. 5.2% is a loss of manufacturing that the South African economy cannot afford. And don't forget, tomorrow there's another public holiday. And I was looking up the list of South African public holidays for 2024. There's 14. And then I looked up the Dutch public holidays. There's 5. That says something, doesn't it? Yeah, the Dutch should have more and South Africa should have less. But anyway, I hope you enjoy your day tomorrow, chaps. Anyway, on the upside, MTN today, 10.5% nearly higher. Quilter had a good day yesterday and a good day today, nearly 5% to the good. Telkom up 3.6%, AngloGold Ashanti up 3.2%, and Pick n Pay 2.7% higher, but still below 23 rand a share. Gosh. Bytes on the downside by nearly 5%. Goldfields down 3.6% after its trading update. Barloworld, a 3.6% loser as well. Sibanye Stillwater, horrible time recently, 2.3% in the red, and Exxaro down 2.2%. David, any other stocks that caught your eye?
I'm going to look down. I just saw SAPI's results out today, and the third quarter results. It was a much improved outlook, but when you look at it over the full 9 months, and still issues there. Saw that the stock was slightly down, but you know, on the back of it, it's one of those enigmas. It's one of those stocks that we never know what's you never know what's going to happen. Lindsay, there is a lot of churning at the bottom end of our market, you know, which in some companies, but amongst the heavyweights, amongst the big stocks, I think you've covered most of the, you know, most of the performance. I think, you know, MTN was probably the biggest stock, but then you get a lot of, there's quite a bit of activity in the small and medium caps, you know, which, and you never know whether they're going up or down because that's how it is.
Before we go to the JSE indices, which David will supply us with, Viv, any AI developments this week? This is your forte.
Okay, this is a funny story, but OpenAI, which is kind of the premier company, makes ChatGPT, okay? A couple of things have happened this last week. Firstly, the president of the company, Greg Brockman, who is like the second in command to Sam Altman, decided to go on holiday until the end of the year, okay?
Nice.
Sabbatical. And then Sam Altman puts out a picture of, says, I love the garden in summer, and the picture includes strawberries. Now, for those that don't know, strawberries is the code word for the next version of this model, this GPT model, or the next kind of technology.
Yeah.
And there is people speculating right now that what's happening is either Greg Brockman has been kicked out, or that these guys are about a trading strawberry and they are basically looking to release this at the end of the year. So he's going to take some time off, a few months, recharge the batteries. And so when this new model comes out, he's back at work and, like, you know, refreshed to kind of handle what's going to be the storm around it. And so, yeah, that is the big speculation happening in AI at the moment. Literally, we're talking about billions of dollars worth of, like, movements are happening because a man sent a picture of strawberries on Twitter and said, I love the garden in summer.
clever. Little teasers there. Very good. Okay. David, closing JSE indices, please.
So we bounce back towards the end, mainly because of what's happening in the US. So we ended up 0.47% at 80739. Resources under a bit of pressure, still battling. I don't think it had anything to do with the Rand. I just said it has to do more with concerns about where commodity prices are. So the overall resource index was down 0.68%, shared amongst all the shares as well. Financials and industrials, better, fairly decent day. The industrials up 1.25%, which is a good showing. Mainly consumer side of it was down slightly in that. And property been creeping up, Lindsay. You know, I've been watching it carefully. It's just slowly moving its way up. I think there's a bit of confidence returns. I'm a bit skeptical about it. I still think that a lot of our buildings, you know, those that operate maybe outside of South Africa are okay, but inside, I still think there are a lot of cost issues that they have to, you know, that they have to bear. It's not all that easy. So, but listen, we're up with the rest of the world. I'll give you the value trader today, which was, slightly better, about 24 billion in a nice purse. MTN amongst the big traders, up about 5.8%. Not up about 5.8%, making up 5.8% of the trade.
Very good.
That's about it.
Okay. Mm. Gentlemen, enjoy your whatever day it is tomorrow.
Ladies' Day, Women's Day.
National Women's Day. That's it. Very good. I hope you go on marches with them and give them
all. We'll be cancelled just now. give Women's Day.
Give them all my love.
Well,
my God. Viv Govender is from Rand Suisse. David Shapiro from Sasserin Securities. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.